group for the invitation and for the opportunity for this talk. Okay. Let's start the plan of the talk. I will briefly review the construction of the Portugal propagator using the Rovelli strategy to compute endpoint function in a background independent context. And in particular, we will focus on the computation that Leonardo, Modesto, and also with Bianchi and Speziale have done about the computation of the diagonal components of this propagator. And we will see how everything works well, in the sense that they are able to reproduce the correct propagator of the linearism theory using the Paret-Kren model as a spin from vertex. And then we will see how if we try to extend this kind of calculation to include the completeness of the structure of the propagator, we find problems that are related to the Paret-Kren model. And I will enter in the details of the calculation to show how this problem can be solved by a simple with a simple proposal that is simply an hypothetical asymptotic structure of a new vertex that would improve the difficulties that would improve the Paret-Kren one, and then we will focus on the new models and see what is more or less the situation about these models and see if these models are able to reproduce the proposed asymptotic structure. And in particular, using some still unpublished results by Parrett and Piston, we will see that the asymptotic behavior of the propagator that they found match with the one that was guessed to solve the problem. And then I will sketch some in progress calculation of the propagator with the new models. Okay, so the loop time propagator. The strategy is usually it's difficult to compute the propagator in a diffeomorphic invariant theory. Everything is indefinite, and Rovelli has found a strategy to overcome the usual difficulties using the boundary formulation and introducing in practice a new class of function with the information on the background coded in a boundary states. In practice, the point of view here is that we have propagation. The propagator is the correlation of propagations that moves on a certain classical solution of the equation of motions that can be that is an extra data that has to be added to the two-point function, and this is done by this Q. In fact, the new two-point function has this extra Q that are the boundary data that defines the ground over which the situation propagates. This is the general definition. In our case, gravity, and the C, that is the boundary states, has to be picked on a geometry, and when a geometry means both intrinsic and extrinsic curvature, metric and extrinsic curvature, of the surface where the two points X and Y are localized. This is the expression of the new function proposed by Rovelli and Modesto. So this is the picture. We have a boundary region, and the point X and Y are on this surface. And on this surface, we have this extra data Q that indicate the classical field over which the quantum excitation propagates. In any case, here we have all the problems of the usual non-renormalizable theory, and the proposal is to overcome these difficulties with quantum gravity and spin-form formalism. how can we do this? We replace the sum over geometries with the sum over S-knots from functional reality. These S-knots represent discrete geometries, and we assign to them an amplitude, a dynamic, using the spin form vector, the spin form formalism, in particular a spin form that should come from generically from a group theory. And these give dynamics to the S-knot states, and then this new ingredient that is the introduction of the coherent states, of the coherent boundary states, that will pick the propagator on this new geometry, new classical geometry. For the moment, there's no clear procedure to select it. It's not like usual quantum field theory when it can be constructed from the propagation kernel, like in the work of Doppler, Mattei, Speziale, Tesla, and Rovelli. But for the moment here, there are some ambiguities. There are three parameters that may arise from the gauge. But the message is, here we have we introduce a boundary states to compute the propagator with loop quantum gravity and spin form formalism, and the last ingredients are the graviton itself, the gravitons, and the gravitons can be reconstructed from loop quantum gravity using the grasping operators E. This is the final result of the loop quantum gravity propagator, which has been given by Potesco and Rovelli. We have the sum of spin networks, the graphene insertion, and the boundary states. They have found that computing the diagonal components of the propagator, they have found the right large distance behavior. And this has been big results because it was equivalent to the Hilbert law, and it reinforced this. All this calculation was based on the use of the parsing model as spin form vertex, and this result has also reinforced the idea that the parsing model was able to reproduce general relativity in the low energy limit.
Yeah, I just have a question about this. So the constant of proportionality.
Yes.
Is there a result with an equality with some numerical factors?
Yes, numerical factors.
So do those numerical factors mean that the real measured mean constant would be g times some numerical factors?
The fact is that in the g depends directly from the three parameters in the boundary states. So what they found exactly, apart from they found the right scaling with the right dimensions. Mm-hmm. What is here, it's unclear, in the sense, here there are some free parameters that can be matched with the one present in the linearized theory. But there are free parameters. So when we will have a clear procedure to select the boundary states directly from the dynamics, that will be fixed.
Right, but that's not done.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
It's a big issue because we don't know how to, for the moment, how to define the concept of in Newton quantum field theory. It's easy. You take the propagation kernel, you do the big rotation, time at infinity, and at least in the free theory, in the free field theory, you get exactly the value. Mm-hmm. Here, thinking.
Okay.
So let's see what's happening if we try to extend this kind of calculation to compute the complete tensorial structure. It's the same recipe, only in practice they have calculated the components. A is the space timing, the space index on the three dimensional surface on the boundary of the region considered, and if we want to have the complete tensorial structure, we have to analyze the case in which the letters here are different. Now, there are some considerations related to the fact that we are thinking to this kind of calculation as arising from the group theory expansion of these dynamics. At first order, in this group theory expansion, the dominant term is the one given by the dominant term is the one given by the amplitude associated to a spin network of this kind, to a first simplex spin network, and this is the dominant terms that is present in the calculations. So let's analyze this spin network. This spin network is the can be seen as the dual it's a first simplex, can be seen as the dual of a first simplex.
I have a question about the strategy here. So one strategy would be I fix a spin network, which means my boundary, the support of my boundary states, which could be simple or complicated. And then I try to find a way to make an expansion and compute these things given these boundary spin networks. But here, that's not what you're doing. What is
the
fix? Because here you're taking a simple spin network on a boundary.
But we have a group theory expansion. We have not yet a completely clear idea on how what this expansion in lambda means. Okay, Carlo has some ideas related to the fact
but the expansion in lambda is an expansion about the bug. Yeah, I'm thinking about the boundary. The expansion lambda has nothing to do about what I do in the boundary.
Yes, but let's take the expansion. You fix your boundary.
But why you?
I'm not fixing. I'm only saying that I fix the boundary.
The boundary state.
The boundary state.
The boundary state. But it could be a very complicated, more complicated graph than this simple.
But fixing the boundary state means only to fix. You fix the geometry of. If you have to give some data that are the geometry of your boundary. Then you do the expansion. Here, in principle, you have all the sum over all the graph that can be seen as the triangulation of your boundary, for example.
Oh, so do you have a way to enter the pairing S psi q for any S?
The fact is the original consideration was simply that if you stop at lambda equal to at first order in lambda, you have the dual of this graph, you have the group theory related to a for simplex. But in front of this, there are some dimension factors that says that the dominant terms is the one with all the 10 phases, the one that gives the dual triangulation of a for simplex. This is not a choice.
I guess my question is, I know the explained the whole field theory.
No. It's just to say.
My question is more about the psi q of S. So do you have a prescription of psi q of S for all S? So, or is it, I'm trying to understand what is the thing you're starting from. If you tell me that, it would be great. So if you tell me, you give me a semi-classical metric, and then I can compute this psi q of S for all S. Then I'm fine. But is that what you have, for each S you define a new state and you don't know
for each S
if it corresponds to the same psi q?
Yes. For each S you define a new state for the moment.
So psi q depends on S.
Yes. Psi q is here it is the sum over all the possible. From here, you say, okay, the dominant terms here at the level of lambda, at the first order in lambda, it is the one of a single for simplex.
You see that the equation is more than omega.
Laurent, can I try? Yeah. Okay, because I think it's clear what you're doing. We're just giving you a hard time, not for any good reason. So this is a question of the intention. This is all supposed to be true in the limit that the volume of the boundary is large.
Yes.
Okay. And I think my version of expressing this word is the following. There are two ways that a spin network can correspond to large volume.
Yes.
It can correspond to large volume by having a single boundary of a four simplex with very large spins, or it can have many, many, many nodes and be a very complicated graph.
Yes, the idea here is the first one.
Right, and it seems like this is just being picked because of the lamplighter principle. This is what you can compute.
Okay, Carlo has better argument.
I've had it out with Carlo. I don't care what Carlo says.
No, okay. Obviously, the first reason is that he did compute it. But the second idea is the one related. Okay, so I need to say that it's not my idea. His idea that we are computing somehow the depth.
Let me try to say, if you are happy to say these are the first time we try to do these things, we use the Laplace principle, we can compute what we can compute, I think that everybody is happy. If you actually want to make a case that really in the real quantum gravity, the limit of large volume of the boundary is to be guided by one four simplex rather than a very large number of nodes, most people would be very skeptical. Most people would think that a natural boundary state
is the sum of many small things.
Is the sum of many small things. Because geometry looks classical down to a very... Geometry doesn't look like a big bunch of geometry here and then a big bunch of geometry in the next room and then a big bunch of geometry in the other room after that. Geometry looks very classical.
So to make the point clear at this point, so... What you wanted some disclaimer on his slide. You wanted some disclaimer on his slide, saying that.
Because this is an open question for the moment. Wait a second. The fact is that if we have a large space time. The one, the macroscopic one, where we want to see this propagation. Okay, the first rough triangulation. I can take this object and do the first rough triangulation. That is, I triangulate this with one four simplex. What is the problem related to the fact that increasing the number of spin networks can be seen, if you want, only as an improving of the finiteness of your triangulation, but not like a new information about the dimension somehow of your chunk of space. Now I take a big chunk of space, and I triangulate it with only, I'm not able, I triangulate it only with one four simplex. It's the quality of the approximation the accuracy of my calculation that is rough because it's not able to see at a finer triangulation, but the limit is well defined.
I think now it's for discussion later.
Can be seen as the dual of the Regge triangulation. If I have a big space time, I don't need to. More spin networks may be seen only as an improved triangulation, a finer triangulation.
Every one of them could give rise to an hour argument over philosophy. So we try to be good.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so for the moment we have to calculate these objects only on a four simplex. the base now is this is the syntax graph, and we have the 15 variables. So the recipe is simple. We have the propagation kernel that depends on these 15 variables, the boundary states that depends on these 15 variables, and we have the quantum operators. Everything depends on the 15 variables. And it depends on the 15 variables because the original calculation were done without the intertwines. Just to make the calculation easier, we project the space-time indexes at the point x and the point y. We take the point x and the point y as the center of Q-tetrahedra. And so we can coincide this point with the dual picture with the nodes. And we project these space-time indexes on the normals to the triangles shared by the tetrahedra. The picture may be more clear. The green spin network is the dual of the triangulation. We have so on each node we have a four valent node. So for valent node is the dual tetrahedral. The green one are the five tetrahedra of the direct triangulation. The point x and the point y are here that are centered in the nodes of the spin network, and we are projecting in this direction. And we have a couple of directions for each node. What they have done computing the diagonal components was to compute terms of this kind. These are the on each node the two normals in the same direction. And these at the end always thinking to edge are nothing else than the area correlators. And in the general case we have general possible cover direction for each node, and these are the non-diagonal components that are related to the angular correlators. So H is this expression, nothing else that H can be expressed in terms of the hashtag electric field. It can be projected in this direction. And what we have to compute is this object. And so the basic thing to understand is the action of these double E operators. So we have the E projected in the couple of the directions. But this is nothing else that each E is nothing else than a grasping operator, so they are double grasping operators. To understand the actions on the nodes, to play with the grappling theory. Okay? No.
Okay.
Sorry. Okay, and the action of these operators is easy in the case in which there's the two direction are the same. So we are only double grasping the same link. The action is diagonal, it reads the casing, and it's the area operator. And so in the simplicial picture, the area, we are looking at the area of the triangle. If we look at the double grasping in two different directions, we have to pay attention because the action of the operators is diagonal or not, depending on the failing of the node. In particular, if the links are coupled in the same, no, if the two links are dual to the two directions are coupled together, the operator is diagonal, otherwise it's not diagonal. The important message is that in any case the coefficient here involves directly the intertwiner dependence. This operator is associated, it's exactly the diagonal angle between the triangles, but this non commutativity says that the diagonal angles don't commute. So if we look only to a four-valent node, we are in the Barbieri quantum tetrahedral case. Okay, so we need a new boundary state because a new with respect to the original work, because the this was the without this I was the state of user to compute the diagonal components. It was nothing else than a Gaussian ticket on a background value or a large value of J0, that is the background spin that can be computed starting from the consideration that from the area of the triangle of the four signals that we are the area of the triangles of the. The area of the tetrahedra, no, the area of the triangles of each tetrahedra of the four simplex that we are triangulating. In particular, they took the simple possible case that was the M equilateral tetrahedron. But we have to pay attention to the fact that we need also this phi, that is the four dimensional background dihedral angles that codes the extrinsic geometry, because this data has to be bigger to the. To the classical solution. The classical solution for a flat tetrahedron means intrinsic and extrinsic geometry. And here, the intrinsic is coded in this J0, the extrinsic is coded in this phi. But now there are also the, on the boundary, the kinematical inverse space loops also to the structure of each three-dimensional space. And there are a role of the intertwiners I. That has to be considered in order to let things work. So, a new state, I proposed a new state that is the old one, that calls the four dimensional geometry, but also has an intertwiner dependence. This I, E is for each node. And the intertwiner dependence here is a Gaussian. Picked on the this I0 is the one that arises from the classical 3D angle, 3D dihedral, three-dimensional dihedral angle, and also very important if you want that the state is semi-classical, you have to add a conjugate phase to this intertwiner, and also maybe that. And also to fix the things with a good semi-classical for syntax, you need correlation between the intertwiners and strings. So you can play a bit with this coefficient, and then you can fix it. I've done this for a semi-classical for a regular configuration. You can fix the parameter to have a semi-classical for syntax that is picked on areas and angles on all the geometry from the four-dimensional point of view and the three-dimensional one. So if you do the calculation with the wireframe model, I don't enter in the details. The final step is simply that you have to compute things like this with insertion of intertwiners and J's, and look at the second order correlation that arises from the dynamics and from the boundary states. What is the mechanism? Let's forget a moment about the intertwiner. The basic mechanism that made the calculation work for the diagonal case was the following. We have a boundary state. The boundary state picks the J's around the J0. J0, that means large areas. If this pick the J around the J0, this means that we can expand the dynamics around G0. The calculation done with the Barrett-Crane model, we knew the asymptotic expression of the Barrett-Crane vertex, and it's nothing else that there are various versions, but it's nothing else that the cosine of the reaction plus the general terms. Now, the first order variation of the reaction is nothing else than the four-dimensional dihedral angle. So the four-dimensional dihedral angle present in the face of the boundary states cancel or double the ones that came from the boundary states. These radius leading terms suppress these degenerate configurations because suppress one of the two, and the one without oscillations survives and can be the propagator. But now, with the extra intertwiner dependence, we have in particular this first order phase that is completely uncompensated by the dynamics and suppresses the sample.
Sorry, what's the brightness function?
Here we are summing over E also. And here we have this cancel or double one of the the sum over E when here when one of the when
this one, this
one phase survives kill this always because it has no phases that can match with E.
Yeah, I'm asking for the I. Yeah, what's not happening?
What's not happening is that we are summing over I. I the sum over I is a sum from 0 to infinity. Okay, it depends on data, but it is a sum. This is rapidly misleading.
Is it something missing from the edge action or something missing from the boundaries?
Something missing from here. There's nothing here with the Barrett train model. Nothing in terms of I. So the problem was the dynamics doesn't fit with the intertwine. The direct effect is that this oscillate and kill everything.
The bound is not really an intertwiner anymore, right?
In Barrett train, no.
Okay, so. Is that so, the point?
So
okay, that's what you're saying. It's just that there's no. Okay, stop. Yeah. That's what you want to say. There's no intertwiner label.
No intertwiner label. Okay. Or if you want, in principle, there was an intertwiner label. And the first interpretation was based on this map between SO4 and SU2 that is somehow, in this map that is wrong with the Barrett-Green vertex. Okay, if you proceed to do the calculation, what you get is something like this, that simply say that the nominal term is a constant. And in this sense, the Barrett-Green model don't reproduce the general relativity in the low energy. So there was the proposal was simply, okay, let's try to fit the intertwines degrees of freedom. We made an hypothesis before that the new models were created. This was simply, okay, what is the basic mechanism that don't work? Is the fact that in the asymptotic expansion of the vertex, there is no phase, there is not intertwine dependence, and in particular, there is not a phase. And this phase, if we take an equilateral configuration, we know what kind of phase it should be. It means that the expansion of the asymptotic around a regular background should have a fixed intertwiner dependence if you want that the calculation works, in the sense that the phases can match. That is the usual mechanism in which the propagation works in quantum mechanics, the matching of the phases of the Singlassian states.
Can I try an analogy to cut through all the technicalities? I mean, supposing one was doing ordinary quantum field theory, and one had a particle whose propagator didn't depend on one of the components of momentum.
Yes.
Okay. Which is analogous to the dynamics not depending on the intertwiner.
Yes.
Then you would start to put your Feynman diagrams together, and when you that part in diagram for that particle was playing a role, when you integrated over the momentum that was missing, things would diverge.
Yes.
So exactly, because the lack of a 1/1 momentum squared of that component would not lead to 1/(x − y)² in the
perfect. Okay. This is the point. Exactly this. If you want propagation of wave packets, you need the matching of the phases. If there are no phases, you kill everything. So the proposal at that time was, okay, I don't know a model able to do this, but if this is possible, things would work. The extra oscillating phases would disappear, so we could recover the right large distance behavior, and the problem now would only be to see if we have enough free parameters of if the tensorial structure that I see here is able to match the one of the linearized theory. And this metric contains the second derivatives of the Regge action and the free parameters in the boundary state. So to compute the complete tensorial structure, you simply take the linearized propagator, you project it in the direction normals to your calculation to match with the object that you have calculated in the loop quantum gravity setting. And the result was that using a symmetrized Gaussian state, because there are problems linked to the symmetrization of the written in these terms, everything depends on the pairing, so you have to symmetrize over the pairing somehow. On the pairings, because the fact is that.
What is that word?
My English. Okay. Each for simplex. For simplex spin networks depends explicitly on the pairing that you have chosen. So if you want to reproduce a semi-classical, and this pairing means non-commutativity of angles. If you want to reproduce an object that has all the symmetries of your semi-classical, of your classical chunk of space-time, you have to symmetrize. Okay, sorry. But everything here will be easier with the equivalent states. We will see this. Okay. The fact was that you can obtain this fixing some free parameters. These results has motivated the search for alternative models, and now we have all this new models. I don't have the gamma, not gamma, but the main question for me now is if this model are able to reproduce this Grantham propagator, and in particular, if they show the proposed interfinite dependence, in the sense that to let things work with these settings, I know exactly what is the number that I would want in the linear terms in the interfinite.
Can I have a question? So, presumably, you have a series in lambda, so you should have corrections if ever you're able to compute in lambda square and so on and so forth. So, what do you mean by non perturbative there? You need to improve the non perturbative theory you have calculated, blah, blah.
The non-perturbative means not the linearized, the loop quantum gravity theory.
Oh. But it's still a perturbative expansion in the Kaplan constant.
It's not the same kind of expansion.
Yeah, it's not the same kind.
No. Non-perturbative there means loop quantum gravity. Okay, the new models, you know everything about the new models. The important factor in what they differ, the PR, FK, apart from the gamma factors, in the presence of diffusion coefficients. Diffusion coefficients are the ones that implement the constraint, the simplicity constraint consistently. And in fact, if you look at the Barrett-Crane model, it can be seen as something with a fusion coefficient, but with an intertwiner that maps on zero. So in fact, the fundamental object of the new models, apart from the 15J, is nothing else than the fusion coefficient that are the fuse the SU2 left with the SU2 right intertwiner with the SU2 on the boundary. The blue one. What changed in the model is the channel of this coupling, but in the Barrett-Crane model, the blue one is zero.
Maybe you can explain it. I'm not sure.
I should.
The picture?
I have 16 slides. But
well, do people understand what is mentioned?
Yeah, 20 minutes.
The paper diagram is the best.
Paper diagram?
I think this is a technical point. Those of us who know
that looks pretty good.
So understand the diagram.
So what do we know about the new models? I began to search for the same classical limit and this problem takes. To answer this question, we've done some preliminary simulation with Bianchi, Mandala, and Perini, Marseille, that have indicated the good classical behavior of the PR model. And also we have studied in detail the fusion coefficient and we found simplification for the FKT fusion coefficient and for the APR and enter in the details, but under this point of view the missing object was the 15J symbol that in terms of the Kaplan theory is impossible and the integral approach was too difficult for us, but after a year has been these key results from Fedele and Conradi, and now from Barrett and Feldberg, which is still unpublished. And they say this is the important fact that the asymptotic expansion of the new models gives for non-degenerate configuration a dominant term that is the exponential of the rejection. Think a moment that this is a big term may play a role in the integral calculation. I will focus on the second approach because it's directly applicable in the Granton propagator calculation and solves the phase, under my point of view, the phase problem. The second question about the model is if we are able to relate it to the canonical theory also at dynamical level, because for the moment, I think at kinematical level, the JPR model has the same structure in quantum gravity, but if we want really to have everything under control, we should be able to relate it to the theme and Hamiltonian constraint. A way to answer to this question may be the extension of the construction of Peretz and Mini in the three-dimensional case, but and we have done it Karim and Francesco Sardelli, a physical scalar product that is able to reproduce the spin-foam model, but we are not able to relate it to the Hamiltonian constraint for the moment. So let's focus on the first question, the numerical simulation. The fact is that all this has been done before that the work of Oran and Florian. The idea was simply, okay, if the vertex should describe the process, the dynamics of a single cell in a range of triangulation of the relativity. This means that if we let the four tetrahedron and let them evolve with the dynamics, we should obtain the last tetrahedron. To do this, we have used the equivalent tetrahedron states. Note that the equivalent tetrahedron states introduced by Speciale and Rovelli is nothing else as this Fourier Q phase, that is the one that I required to let everything work. This Fourier Q is nothing else that in the equilateral case, the fact that when you consider the quantum object here, you have only one dihedral angle. If you want to pick on the real geometry and all the dihedral angles like in the classical case, you have to make a superposition states and have a momentum conveyed to this I that represent the dihedral angle. This is the construction of the equivalent tetrahedron that we have implemented to construct the same classical simplex. Okay. Very quickly, simply, okay, we have done the calculation and we have seen that in effect it propagates. You put four coherent states and four coherent tetrahedron, and you put tetrahedron and you get the coherent tetrahedron. We have improved all the calculation and we have seen that this dimension here is perfect. And this was an indication of the fact that the vertex has this appropriate case. Okay, we have some analytic result on F, but only we have found a simple analytical formula that shows some properties. But I will. How much?
You have 15.
Yeah.
15. No, not 15.
Okay, so let's see how to use the Barrett Feldberg result. The things that I say that came from a relativity lunch in Marseille, where John came to show us this work, and it is still unpublished. But the strategy is simple. On each node, in principle, the object is written in terms of W of E, where E is the intertwiner. But we can rewrite it introducing the SUQ coherent states introduced by Lin and Speciale, and that are obtained simply averaging for SUQ coherent states, the real SUQ coherent states. And on each node, we have an object like this that depends on the representation on each link. But this object is really a semi-classical description of this tetrahedron with the four normals. In this way, if we introduce for each node one semi-classical, one coherent intertwiner, we have a base for the four simplets that depends on the 20 normals in addition to the 10 J's that characterize the 10 areas. There are a lot of constraints. In reality, the normals are less, but what they have done is the study of the asymptotic properties of this object, the projection of W on this coherent state. On this coherent state base, and using an asymptotic analysis based on standard point approximation, they found this important result. What is this? The asymptotic of this object is nothing else but the exponential of an action with a measure. When you do the standard point approximation, you get some exponential decreasing. And that I've summarized in this measure. This is the picture that they are considering. Here is the vertex, and they contracted it with five SU2 coherent intertwiner. And what they found is that this is an exponentially decreasing measure that exponentially suppressed if the J and the A and N are not consistent. What does it mean, consistent? Consistent means that the triangles have the areas determined by the J's, and the we have a four syntax in R4. The triangles have the areas determined by the J's, and the tetrahedra have the three-dimensional geometry determined by the normals. This means that when the things are consistent, when we are on shell, in practice, if I give you J's up to discrete degeneracy, I give you N. N is a function of J on shell. So this action can be seen on shell as nothing else than the RG action in terms of area and three-dimensional area length. So it should be the Dietrich speciale RG action. And apart from the identification, this result is enough to show that W has the correct asymptotic form. And to do this, we have to do nothing else than transform back this object to the intertwiner basis, the one used in the original calculation, and look at the first order variation. Here we get something like if we expand this around an equilateral configuration, we get something that goes like e to the I pi over 2 k in this notation. We are happy. And this is the linear term. Then we have to consider the second order. But at least the problem found with the Barrett-Crane model is solved. So, we are going to evaluate this. Using the Barrett Wiseman result, we can plug in this expression, and this factor picks the integral on the n determined by the j. It means that if I'm picking on j0 on an equilateral configuration, the J0 are enough to determine the N, and the N are the one of the regular tetrahedra, N0. We have still to do the integral, and there is an SU2 multiplicity for each of the tetrahedron, but this can be absorbed because it's like to say the J determine the N0, but the N0 that are the normal to a regular tetrahedron are fixed up to there is a global rotation of each of the five tetrahedra, but this can be absorbed in the integral because the action is invariant under this SU2 rotation and also the state. So at the end we end up with this. This is only a term, and this is the object that we have to calculate with N0 that the n of regular tetrahedron, So the last key ingredient is only the projection of this state on the intertwiner base, and with this I mean the maximum weight. And this calculation has been done by Bianchi in a paper that is going to appear, and this is the expression with an explicit dependence of n, and the fact is that for large j's with the n of a regular configuration, we get nothing else than the Rovelli special classes of the trailer, so the right phase. So the important result is the fact that we have found this correct pi over 2 factor in the phase for the that was missing in the part train vertex. Without entering in the details, if I look to the also to the expansions, the expansion in J, we found we can find from this the linear order of this expansion gives the four-dimensional diagonal angle that have to match still with the boundary state. So at liberal phase, the things work nice now. So we have shown that the obstacle that prevented the bifurcated vertex to leave the propagator at least is solved by the new vertex. Now we are computing the propagator with Fourier states. This is unpublished. We are working on it. The fact is, okay, let's forget now about the intertwiner base, because we have simply discovered that the things that we were using, the single-axial tetrahedra, were nothing else than the SU2 intertwiner, coherent intertwiner, la Levine speciale. And let's define the boundary states with the information on the geometry that directly picked on directly encoded in the normals. Before, here I had I. And to understand what was the classical geometry, to pick the I around one I0 and then phase associated to that. But now everything can be done directly with the normals of these coherent states. And this is very useful because. The calculation were easy for the regular tetrahedron, not in the general case. So if now we use the diagonal representation of the equivalent states operator, all that we get is this expression that is this. So the picture is the following. This is the boundary states. The boundary state. The boundary state is the information on J that picks the four-dimensional structure of the four sigmas. The normals, this scalar product picks the normal inside the integral around the background of ones. The insertion are nothing else than the fluctuation of these normals around the normals in the background. And W correlate the test fluctuation with the four-dimensional information contained in the dynamics. And this linear everything is three-dimensional, apart from psi that these tetrahedra are in four dimension. If we use the part Feynman result, we get this. And now the point is to understand this object, because if this acts like a delta, it means that the n are n of j. When n are n of j, s is nothing else than the Reggie action, and we are looking at this insertion that now becomes n of j, and we are doing the Reggie propagator, and it works, it's a good one. The problem is that also there may be unexpected terms that arise from the non-geometrical configuration. The non-geometrical configuration, because in this setting, the J and the N are free to fluctuate independently. And if, for example, this is an exponential with a second order terms in J and N, this would mix with the second order here, and the second order in the boundary states. So it will give a correction to the to the energy propagator. This correction, we are trying to understand the order of the steps, because if they are subleading, we are happy that they are only corrections, because they are loop quantum gravity correction to the user propagator. If they are of the same order, we don't know if the free parameters and the structure is still good to obtain the correct propagator. So the conclusion is simply that we have to change the dynamics, but this is something that now is well known, because the Bernstein model is not the intertwined dependence, and using the Bernstein vertex, we are not able to reproduce the large distance behavior of the propagator, and in this sense, the Bernstein vertex doesn't work. And now we have all the new models, and in principle, we can obtain the full tensor extraction and the propagator supposing some free parameters and this asymptotic structure. And now we know that on the new models, apart from the preliminary indication on the fact that things were going in the right direction, we know that the asymptotic of the new models gives the exponential energy action, but also that this new model has the intertwined dependence that let the calculation work. And now the gradual propagator calculations with the new model seems to show that the gradual propagator is corrected by this new term. Now we have to understand this new term. So, open question, the new terms in the propagator, we have to understand the order, and if they are the same order of the red J ones, we have to understand if the free parameters in the boundary states are enough to reproduce the propagator. Otherwise, if they are subleading, we are happy, and they could represent the first quantum gravity correction to the propagator. And another question is to understand now how to fix the boundary data, the boundary free parameters from the vertex, like in user quantum field theory, we hope to be able to relate this to the canonical theory. Then the Eiger order correction, the endpoint function, the multiplication. But the idea is that we are in the position to get correction to the gradient propagator with a theory that has not the problems of merger or normalizability. That's all.
Thank you.
Right.
Any comments or questions? Right,
but he's right. He's up. So there's something kind of basic, stupid question that I didn't really understand. So you said that the boundary state depended on S. How does that work? So that has to be the case, right? Because if it's a fixed.
No, sorry, but the boundary states?
The Q, the boundary state,
yes,
depends on S, right? That's what you said.
On S?
On S, the spin from the ball.
No, the boundary state, you choose the boundary state.
But okay, so if you choose if you choose the boundary state and it doesn't depend on your sub, it's just fixed for all the sub, and your two points are on the boundary,
mm-hmm.
and you have the metric on the boundary, then if you just take the expected, you already know what h at that point is, right? Because you already know the metric on the boundary. So.
No, in fact, this is a. Hidden in the definition of the, you know the metric, but you don't know the fluctuation.
Okay, so it's just a fluctuation.
We are looking at the fluctuation.
So, if I understand correctly, when you try to explore the tensorial structure, you need to add a new term in the boundary state, a very precise term. Then you notice that for the Rovelli vertex, actually you get exactly that the right behavior and so on and so forth. But initially, what fixes your dependence there in the boundary state you put? Because in the end, the boundary state you put it by hand. Why do you have exactly I pi over 2 times the interfinal? And why not?
Because the construction is okay. You believe that the theory behind all this is loop quantum gravity. So you believe that the states are the S-naught state. The S-naught state depends on J's and pi's.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, you want. This ball, you want a semi-classical ball, and you have to construct it as a quantum superposition of states of this kind, and you try to do that. the first rough construction of this ball is this state that has this extra dependence, and this extra dependence that has this face and this extra face on it's not. You know the geometry. You want to construct the ball. To construct the ball, you have to fix the J's. Then you ask, are they enough to... now let's compute all the observables that I can construct. And among the observables, there are the three-dimensional dihedral angle. You construct the three-dimensional dihedral angle and you can fix the value of the three-dimensional dihedral angle to the one that you want, to the one of your boundary states. In this particular case, all the angles have to be equal and equal to the cosine of minus 1/3. This fixes your I0. Then you ask, is it enough? No, because if I change pairing, the two angles don't commute. So I have to construct a semi-classical object that is able to give this I0. So it's not arbitrary. The arbitrary is on the J's, if you want.
And this fixes the linear term in I to be
yes,
I times pi over 2 yes. Times the interfiner yes. And no other factor.
Yes. These are I from the fact that when you change pairing, the basic way in which we have done it, when you change pairing, each quantum state is the dual of a four-valent node. If you change a four-valent node, we have a 6J. If you want that the two objects are the same, you work a bit with this coefficient and you find pi over 2. At the beginning, we didn't know what this pi over 2 was meaning. Now we know that is from the coherent states point of view, it is exactly saying that it has a geometrical interpretation, if you want. It's the angle between, tetrahedron, it's the angle between two edges of the tetrahedron, that is the variable conjugated to the dihedral angle. So it's really, we are doing semi-classical states.
Yeah. Let me come back to the first argument about Fire Train. So I have a long-standing worry here. Pick one, so you decide that you want to compute an amplitude connection with the boundary state, which is the boundary state has support on just the boundary of a force and flux. In the boundary of the force inflex, there's some node, and associated with that, there's some interfering. Okay. And the issue is just following on this to get some dependence from the bulk path integral on that interfering that can damp give some UVR. And you just said, okay. Now, let's consider just the Barrett crane. At leading order, the Barrett crane amplitude depends just on the same data. Okay, because the force inflex that we're taking the amplitude of is the same, the boundary of that force inflex is the force inflex, which is the boundary state. And therefore, there's no, because the Barrett-Crane model doesn't depend on, it just has one intertwiner, there's no sum over intertwiners, and you don't get the boundary you want. Okay? But now let me consider that I go to high order than that. So I consider that inside is a much more complicated triangulation. Okay? It still has the same boundary. Then in that much more complicated triangulation, even in the Barrett-Crane case, can't I get a dependence from something? Now I get summing over lots more things that are, in other words, I'm very much less constrained because in the sums I have all the internal degrees of freedom that I sum over. And isn't there a good possibility that I could get a dependence on the intertwiner in the boundary state coming from the higher order terms of the Barrett-Crane?
No, in the sense that the Barrett crane at the end is like if we are doing Regge calculus. Here, the message to me looks like different. We are not doing Regge calculus. The theory behind this is something different. It's something that not only has the areas, but has this intertwiner. This intertwiner is hidden the non-commutativity of the structures. And this is something that is missing in the Barrett crane.
No, I understand all that, but what I still am very unhappy with is the notion that what dominates, to compute the graviton propagator, you want to know what dominates at long distances. So this is really, there's no way to avoid going back to this basic question. Okay. I'm very uncomfortable. I like calculation, the results are great. A lot of work has gone into it. It's important work that had to be done. But in the end of the day, do we really think we have the graviton propagator for gravitons to propagate from that wall to that wall? I don't think so. Okay. Because I think that what's really going on is that that wall has a very complicated state in it, which is composed of things which have typical Planck dimensions. And the path integral is over things which are dual to triangulations which are of Planck dimensions. And so I think where I think the limit that we want is arbitrarily high order. I think the classical limit is arbitrarily high order in that, in the Lambda expansion, not being order in the Lambda expansion. I guess I'm finding different ways to express that.
No, I understand your point there.
And then the criticism of Barrett-Crane, that is, criticism of Barrett-Crane as well as, you know, seems to be couched on the idea that the leading order is supposed to look, the leading order quantum geometry is supposed to look like a classical geometry, but because I think the classical limit is large lambda and not leading order lambda, I don't care if the leading order lambda doesn't look much like classical geometry. It doesn't look like the dual of classical geometry.
No, I understand your point. You are the philosophy. Man is more than that.
Well, that's the way statistics people did not get the correspondence between statistics.
But no, there is an argument
by taking one big atom.
That is only an argument. Always, there's a Carlo ideas, not mine.
No, I want to know your ideas because I argued with Carlo.
There is the vertex argument. The vertex argument in the sense of the electromagnetism. In the sense of the electron, to compute the propagator in electromagnetism, all that you need at the end is the how you have to know how to exchange one photon, not all the classical, all the real field composed by I don't know how many millions of photons.
That's the series we know.
Maybe can I
try?
Let's hear
Laurent.
Yes.
Okay. Let me try to.
Yeah, because there's several layers of discussion here. So I would say first is not challenge. In some sense, it's been from philosophy or hope or an hypothesis that doesn't belong. Which is the following that what you're trying to do there, and there are several layers of, I think there's several, one that new question that extremely important questions. There's just like several questions intertwined, and some of them are easy answers and some of them don't. So let's say the hope is that you say, well, first the instead of labeling my energy states by graviton, I'm using another. And then the hope is that when you do the computation of the vertex amplitude, this big weight that you have here, it's an expansion around flat space. So it should be a low curvature expansion. So that is what you're supposed to the way at least I do this, this amplitude is that what it is that I'm trying to describe a big chunk of quantum flat space with certain small perturbation. So now there's different limit you can take. If I want to describe a big chunk of flat space where there's very little happening, what it is doing, or the hope is that what it is doing is just enough, right? That is, this big chunk could be extremely microscopically big, but the curvature would be extremely, extremely low. Right? Now, if you want to have a description of a much more interesting situation in which the curvature is higher, right, then you will need to have a denser problem boundary and the boundary state, which is containing much more nodes. But that's kind of a different thing. So the hope, there's two layers of hope. The hope is that first you compute suppose that you have the right propagation kernel domain. And let's say we don't, you know, I don't think we do have that yet. There are lots of evidence. But suppose at some point you have this propagation kernel. Then you would say, well, let me compute this propagation kernel with very simple advantages. So clearly, it's like, you know, which is like computing the S matrix with very little external gravity. So there's two layers of the hope. The general hope is that this thing is probing the physics of quantum gravity around quantum flat space. It's more or less by construction. The next layer, which is I think what Carlo's, where I would put the name of Carlo, because all of that is just the general spin from philosophy, is that Carlo might hope that this information here is exactly the same information as the S matrix elements. Personally, I don't believe that, but you know, the first thing I do believe, clearly this guy contains a lot of information about very precise observers, you know, probing the geometry of flat space. Whether these observers are exactly the graviton-like, I personally don't believe it, but you know, we can argue about that. And I think the fact that Carlos believes that and wants to prove it is a good thing. But you see, it could be this calculation, it's still that it is a macroscopic calculation. You expand around very little stuff inside. And then, if you want really to get S matrix elements, I would say if you want to get, my belief is that if you want to get the S matrix elements, the map between, say, graviton basis, because really there should be a graviton basis, external gravitons can be described as free states, synthetically.
But not like that.
And the spin network basis, right, for a long wave, there should be a matrix element between the two.
Well, wait.
And you see a transformation, and it might be that this transformation, this is the worry, should contain a high number of nodes, and that I would be very happy with this. But it might also be that it's convenient to talk the physics with these other states, the network states, which are.
Well, I guess part of part of my problem with this is that is what's the state which is just flat space, and so my sense is the state which is just flat space has port
on all graphs. I totally agree with that. So I totally agree. So having the right model, I totally agree with that. So I think the right model means that you should be able to have this propagating kernel with all possible boundary graphs. And then some check of consistency, which is maybe your question. That is, if I compute the two-point function here and there in one state, so what I want to compute just the two-point function of certain operator dual to these insertions of the E. I think you can argue, well, I can do that only with the one for simplex, because that's all I need to prove. I don't need more information. But of course, I need to have some consistency that this computation should not, you know, if I do the same computation, I identify the same boundary states, but, in overlapped with a different spin network, I might get the same. I want to have some consistent information. So I think all of that are so, Bob, you said, I think it differentiates, right? I'm not saying the answer is so, but it's not as naive as you made it sound. It's really that if you want to probe, it's like if you want to probe an observable of cosmology, well, universe described that an isotropic universe contains only one point, right? And then you need only one observable to do that. So it's something like that, it's an extension around quantum classes. But convince you of that.
There's work to do.
Yeah. There's work to do there.
I
have a question for you, because given that, I'm also not really happy of looking as just the boundary of one idea. Or maybe it's an advertisement, because it seems to me that now we have the techniques to do all of this computation for an arbitrary knowledge boundaries.
That's true.
I wanted to know why you. I mean, is it just that it's a simple restriction?
That's for one.
Okay. So, no, that's fair. It's just that. Okay. But now, in the direction of the
answer, there is your formulation let's say that we have an MJ for arbitrary calculation. For sure, it has to be. But if it doesn't work with this, my idea, the way in which I see this thing is this
red triangulation, this rough red triangulation of some big macroscopic chunk of space. Yes, we have to go to the next order, but if it doesn't work with the 5 tetrahedra, I think that it would work with 100. Then I'm not saying that this is the point of view, and I'm only saying that there is at least this argument of small fluctuation about something macroscopic. Something macroscopic roughly described, but only one chunk. Then, okay, a lot of work to do. Okay, but just only this kind of calculation has shown that the quantization mistake of Barrett-Klein model, and the more we are able to enter in the details of this calculation, and more we understand of the model.
Good. So, there are any other comments or concerns? Or if not, let's thank Manuela again.